Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose McKinney & Evans. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. We certainly do thank you for joining us this week. On the program this week, once again, we have Doug Prather, the president of the Cocaline Development Corporation in Seymour, Indiana. And Doug is here today to talk about the Cocaline's CBD venture, ThriveWell, and some other topics. Doug, thanks so much for coming back and joining us on the program.
Hey, Jason, I certainly appreciate your reach out and having me back on the program, and we certainly appreciate both McKinney and Evans as well for their support of your podcast.
Well, they've been making it happen since podcast number one several months ago, and again, you were involved in those first couple of podcasts. I know we spoke back in April. At that time, everybody was still kind of in a scramble to get regulations passed and then get seeds in the ground, but then the spring rain kind of slowed everybody down a little, even causing some folks to have to, I believe, scrap until 2020. How did the weather fare for you guys this spring over the summer, and how did it affect you down in Seymour?
That's a great question, Jason, for sure. You described the atmosphere at that point in time as kind of a scramble, and it was, an atmosphere of a scramble to get things in the ground. I tell you, it's still kind of a scramble, but going all the way back to that time, we were fortunate enough to partner with three different farmers down here in Jackson County, and our schedule was such that we were able to get product in the ground. We chose, if you go all the way back and recall, we got a license as a research license. So we chose to plant several different varieties and plant those in different ways. We planted direct seed. We planted seedlings. We planted clones, different varieties, but all within a window of probably about a month. So we were shortly in front of Mother Nature and Mother Nature's wrath, I would say, this spring, and certainly felt it. Fortunately, one of the things we did do in our selection process of the ground that we used was one of many things, but one was trying to select ground that drained well. So in one case, we had some tile drainage under one of our fields, and that one survived things the best. The other one, we put some mounding up with some plastic around our plants, and that one drained pretty well off the plants. It caused us some problems in between the plant rows, but we actually got out there with some water pumps and sucked a lot of that off. So when it's all said and done, we don't know what percentage of what we planted we lost. We anticipate it to be probably no less than 10%, and keep our fingers crossed that it's no more than somewhere between 15 and 20%.
Now, when you guys are out typically planting other crops or other farmers in your area, corn, soybean, things like that, there's a certain amount of time you expect to have to put into those crops. But with hemp being a new crop and all the things you just described, sounds like there was a lot of time involved there. How much time and how many people were involved in that process?
Yeah, there was a lot of time and a lot of people. We have three different farmers that each have some folk working for them. And we had on our farm side of the house, we had four different people that were involved at some level. And we started meeting probably back in February and would meet once a week from February until we got planted, just trying to figure out exactly what it was we wanted to do, why we wanted to do it, how we were going to capture the data of what we did, because the variety of what we did, the purpose was to learn and to understand and know next year and be able to share some knowledge with some folk as to what works and why, or what we believe works and why. So keeping track of all that information as we've moved through the growing season and being prepared to do that was a big part of what we did. So we were together 3 months probably before we ever planted, trying to put a plan in place. And that's as the best laid plans have been known to go astray. Mother Nature throws a curveball in there, as well as seed quality, just everything that goes into it. So when I kind of alluded to, it's still It's still very busy and still very much a learning atmosphere. It is. Every day that goes by, we're understanding more and more and more about this plant and what it takes in Indiana to grow it successfully.
And of course, all this work is for the future, and you assume it's going to pay off. Do you anticipate right now it is worth all the effort you guys have been putting into this?
Well, I certainly hope so, because there's been a lot of effort put into it. Quite candidly, there's been a substantial amount of capital put into it. Yeah, I think we discussed the first time. One of our goals in doing this is certainly make sure that we do it the right way, and we do it for the long haul. So the only way to really do that is to make sure you do your diligence on the front side. And the front side happens to be an entire growing season. So to answer that question right now, I'm not sure that I have the knowledge yet to answer that question. I can tell you, we, as well as others in the state, have come a long, long, long way in a short period of time. And unfortunately as well, I do hear some stories of some other folk around the state that haven't quite come as far along. And might be able to answer that question for you a little more definitively. Are we still behind our project? Oh, yeah. Do we still see this market being a very, very viable market, and one that can provide in the form of CBD oil or delivery some relief for some folk? We sure do. And we'll get there, and there will be a standard one day. Being the beta and trying to come up with that standard can be fun, interesting, challenging, heartbreaking, you name it.
Well, once again, Doug Prather, the president of Cocaline Development Corporation in Seymour, Indiana, and their CBD venture, Thrive Well. Now, Doug, the playing on the Cocaline history, there's 80 years of history with the Cocaline Development Corporation, so that certainly has to give you guys some backbone and really help you in when you are putting together an entire new or joining an entire new industry.
You know, it does. It does in a lot of different ways. It does from an experiential perspective and understanding some simple things, understanding the value of state and national organizations, understanding the value of networking and being friendly with other folk that some from the outside might perceive, my gosh, you guys appear to be direct competitors. Why would you be sharing ideas about how to grow things? Mm-hmm. This brand new industry, and the benefit to both is there, and the benefit to everybody. We're employee owned, so all the decisions that we make have to always have in mind the responsibility that comes with every employee in the company owns a part of the company. We've got to make sure that we're right a whole lot more times than we're wrong. So as speculative as this industry might be, or as young as this industry might be, the approach that we take to it is one, as I referenced earlier, a long-term approach. And yeah, there's been some roadblocks, and there's been some concerns, and there's been some debate and so on and so forth. But when you come down to it, if you believe in what you're doing, if you believe in how you're doing it, and you believe there is a market for it, and you're willing to work to get that, you can be successful.
All right, and Doug, let's talk about Cocaline again. We'll get back to hemp here in just a second, or obviously this will lead us right back into it. We jumped into it a little quick there at the beginning because we did have you on the program before, but I do want to go back and revisit for a minute the rich history of Cocaline. For anybody that did not get a chance to hear this back in April, Cocaline started out as two little gas stations and an old oil tanker truck in Seymour. It grew to nearly 100 locations at one point. That's where people would remember seeing the Cocaline name. Now you guys have spun off one of your companies as Thrive Well, which is digging into the CBD and hemp industry. Let's go back to the Cocaline story. Give us in a nutshell that story, because it is a great Indiana story.
It really is a great Indiana story. The Myers family and believe it or not, Carrie Myers, a female at that point in time, back in 1938, was looking for a way to make sure that her three sons had a future in front of them. And as you alluded to, bought a couple small gas stations, a tanker truck, and there they were, and they were in business. After four generations and 80 years, at one point in time, we had close to, as you indicated, 100 locations operating in six states and did a lot of entrepreneurial stuff during that time. Owned our own gasoline terminal, put in Subway stores, put in antique type stores, just a lot of things that were very entrepreneurial along the way. Kind of saw what we didn't kind of see. We saw the advent of what we call big box retail, and that would be your Walmarts, your Costco's, your Sam's Club, get into the gasoline business. And that changed the landscape significantly as it would relate to where you could make money and survive, really, to be quite honest with you. So
I'm sure that came down to simple economics, where they were able to buy more gas in bulk than you guys could, and that certainly would hurt the little guy.
It was, and really, to give them credit, they kind of built a better mousetrap. They had all of that parking space out there that wasn't being utilized. And really, I thought it was a creative idea for them to put in gasoline, be able to buy at that type of volume. And really, their goal was to get you in that store. So they didn't have a big concern of making a whole lot of money. You hear about lost leaders in environments like that. And in many cases, that's exactly what they did with their fuel. Well, that was our survival. So we made an intentional decision to downsize, and we were successful in getting that done. And as of 4 years ago, we sold off all of our gas. We sold off our last interest in any kind of gasoline. Now, during that time, we had opened up a division called Smoker's Host, and those are discount tobacco stores. And we operate 15 of those locations across the state of Indiana now. And also during that time, we purchased Ranger 3PL, which is a 3PL company located here in Seymour, Indiana. We have 16 buildings, 800,000 square feet, and we support and service the manufacturing community here in Jackson County and the contiguous counties.
And how many employees do you have throughout the entire Coca-Lean Corporation?
Yeah, throughout the entire organization right now, we're just short of 100 employees. So significantly smaller than what we were at one time.
And every one of those employees have ownership in the company, or is there a certain number of years you have to be there, any sort of circumstances surrounding that, or is everybody a part owner?
Yeah, there are some qualifiers to participate in that program, but everybody has the opportunity to meet those qualifications beginning after one year of service anniversary.
And then do those folks have an opportunity to participate in the decision making, or is it more just a profit sharing situation?
Well, it is a deferred income retirement program situation, but those not necessarily as a part of the ESOP per se. One of the reasons I quickly will say in some of my conversations with people, you can't fake 80 years. And that's the truth. And one of the ways that we've been able to survive for 80 years is to listen to all of our team members. And that sounds cliche, but if you really do go and talk to folk who are doing the work, it's not necessarily that they'll always come to you and provide you with information. But boy, if you give them an audience, or you give them an audience and you give them a stage to talk to you and you ask the question, you'll learn so much, because people are vested in what they're doing. And generally speaking, want to improve what they're doing. So yes, but not necessarily directly associated with the ESOP, if that makes some sense to you.
Oh, absolutely. Understandable. Now, the reason I'm bringing that up, getting to the point of if a company like this, a little easier to maneuver. You said you had to get out of the gasoline business, move into other areas, and that leads us into your CBD venture, or back to your CBD venture of ThriveWell. And this was the decision among a few of you to get involved in this. How has the how has the entire operation come along as far as everybody on board with employee ownership of a company like that?
You know, it's been tremendous. And as a matter of fact, the way that we decided to make the final decision to come on board was to bring both of our operating division groups together in one setting, that being the warehouse side, or the Ranger folk, and the Smoker's Host folk, and spend a day with some outside help doing some brainstorming work on what our future looked like and what opportunities our future had in front of us. Our tobacco store division, our smokers host division, had some experience selling CBD product, and then they are all in the state of Indiana. So that was at the time that information from a public and educational perspective was really occurring. So they brought to the table that we should get involved in the manufacturing of CBD oil and products, and then the warehouse side of the industry. Our company came and knew that we were looking for new and alternative products to store, something to diversify what it is we're storing. We're a large community, as is the state, of automotive-based manufacturers. And if we can diversify away from some of that automotive and not be completely dependent upon that, then we would have ourselves in a better position. And they brought to the table CBD. So that was really the kicker that took us over the edge to say, let's do this. Let's give it a shot.
And once again, we're speaking with Doug Prather, the president of Cocaline Development, as well as ThriveWell. Doug, you've talked before about your farm-to-manufacture model. And again, we've been listening to you discuss most of this already today. But go ahead and, in a nutshell, give us an example of what that means.
You know, thank you for asking that, Jason, because as we move through the summer, one of our initiatives with ThriveWell was, okay, let's go out and start talking to some potential customers and let's see who we can start building some agreements and alliances with as we roll forward. And more importantly than what I realized was their desire to have a supplier that is integrated from a farm to manufacturer. I certainly don't want to speak poorly of anybody, any others or anything like that, but as new as this industry is, there are a lot of unknowns about where product is coming from, be it that it's some type of finished product all the way down to some type of biomass. Having that full transparency and having the relationship all the way back to the farmer, where literally you can sit across from somebody and say, yeah, Get on I-65, come down to Seymour, and I'll drive you out, and I'll show you our farm fields, and I'll let you meet the farmers, and I'll let you talk to the farmers, and you can see the quality and the process that we're doing there. And I'll give you a look at what we're doing here from the standpoint of our manufacturing and the quality of what we're doing there, and the transparency of being able to follow all of that product from, as the industry says, seed to sale. So that has been received. We did that because we wanted to ensure and make sure that, again, being in this for the long haul, that we were doing all of the processes, all of the testing, everything necessary to make sure when we brought a product to market, it was a quality product. One of the results of that is a high comfort level to potential people or potential customers, because they are then ensured that what they are going to do with the product subsequent to us, is of high quality. So that's been a real good thing for us.
And the product that you're attempting to put out there, the process certainly allows you to both support the Indiana economy as well as the farming communities in your area.
You know, that's extremely important to us. We have a large farming community down here. The state of Indiana has a large farm. Heck, the Midwest has a large farming community. But yes, the state has been so good to us over this 80-year history. We'd like to think that we've been good to the state. But the excitement from farmers around that you heard, and the willingness from some of these farmers to take the time to really make sure that this does make sense, and that it is something that's long-term sustainable was very important to us. And anytime we can participate in the state of Indiana and help the state's economy locally all the way to the state, that provides us a level of satisfaction that you're just not going to get anywhere else.
And a lot of people involved with that, with a lot of strong cooperation with the folks from the Midwest Hemp Council right here, as well as the folks at Purdue.
Yeah, that's been invaluable, quite honestly. It's interesting. We're all in the same boat. This is brand new. And I was surprised originally when I would go out and be inquisitive with questions of folk that I thought, you know, kind of would be experts, right? Purdue University in agriculture. Mm-hmm. And I give the folk at Purdue all the credit in the world, because when we first sat down, many of their answers were, we don't know. And the reason they didn't know is because it hadn't been grown in years, but they were very thankful for having folk like us and others around the state who were willing to take a risk and be able to provide some of this data back so that in the future there are more answerable questions. The Midwest Hemp Council, in terms of advocacy, as well as a networking and connection perspective, I would recommend to anybody who might be listening to this podcast that isn't a member, who has been wondering value of membership, I would recommend to anybody the value of the membership is there. If nothing else, bringing this community together in one common place to talk about common problems that need resolution. We all in the state who are doing this, maybe at some level, will be looking to attain or grab the same customer, and maybe only one of us can win. But when it comes down to it, as it would relate to this market and the opportunity in this market, I don't think that there's going to be a winner unless we all do support each other, down to from best practices to legislative requirements to any number of different issues around hemp. Again, I'd strongly recommend taking a look at joining the council.
All right. Once again, Doug Prather, president of Cocaline Development and ThriveWell. Doug, a couple other quick questions for you here. Again, since you're so in touch with the Hoosier farmers out there, we always try to accentuate the positive here. It's been a very strange year. A lot of people had no idea what to expect last winter as we were rolling into the spring and things were getting approved. The SB 516 was getting passed. A lot of people were excited about hemp. Do you see that? Have you seen some people on one hand that have said, you know what, after everything I've seen over the summer, I'm going to stay away from hemp for a while, versus other folks who have said, you know, there's been some obstacles there, but this is still something I'm really positive about and want to move forward with?
Yeah, I probably have. And I say probably have. We're aligned with a group of farmers that I would tell you from our experience right now, regardless of some of the challenges that we've run into, are still very much supportive of moving forward and making this work. Has reality set in somewhat over the state as more information has been learned? For sure. And let me give you one example. So much of what Indiana farmers have been dealt with from an experiential perspective is row crop farming, highly mechanized. There's not a lot of mechanical options as it would relate to certainly harvesting CBD right now, hemp for mm-hmm. CBD mm-hmm. right now. So, yeah, I think there's been some kind of wake up moments where some people have probably walked away from what they first thought that they might be willing to do. In the same breath, things are coming out new every day that are changing that circumstance, as well as I think it might depend sometimes on maybe who the farmer you have aligned with, just their overall risk appetite, and quite candidly, some experiential background. One of our farmers, for example, also is a tomato farmer. So from the perspective of understanding manual processes in order to harvest a crop, that's something that his business has had in place for some time now, because they've done that currently already with their tomatoes. So he and his folk had a little better mental acceptance mm-hmm. Of some of the labor that would be involved, and others have learned of it. So yes and no. I think, yeah, the community in general probably has been educated to a point that there have been some that have walked away, but golly, we're real fortunate, knock on wood, right now to have a group that we partner with that are full go with us.
Well, Doug, in an era where a lot of small farmers are being pushed out by the larger corporations because of automation, it's just easier to plow fields and to get the crops in and get them out with less manual labor. But hemp involves a lot of manual labor. There's not much automation about it. Is that a benefit for the small farmers?
I think it is. I think it is. And in which it's the double-edged sword. That can be a benefit for the small farmers. The other side of that is, boy,
it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, and they're struggling for employees just like everybody else in the state is, just like everybody else in the country, I suppose, is. Mm-hmm. So we have seen that, quite honestly, as we are preparing for harvest. Our farmers, the one tomato farmer, for example, that I was speaking about, he still has a group of staff that he can reach to, but that staff is leaner than what it's been before, because everybody who, quote unquote, wants to work is working right now. So it's a challenge, but anything that's of value generally doesn't have some sort of challenge associated with it, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So I think overall it could be a differential advantage for a small farmer for sure.
All right. Once again, Doug Prather, the president of Coqueline Development and also with ThriveWell LLC. Doug, how can folks get information both on the Coqueline company as well as ThriveWell?
Yeah, the best place to go to get information would be go out on the internet to coqueline.com, coqueline.com. That's got a landing page with all kind of different links to it that can drive you to any number of our operating businesses. And you could reach out via email, phone call, check us out on Facebook, check us out on LinkedIn, all the social media places. You can find us there, and if nothing else, remember the Midwest Hemp Council and give them a call when you want to talk about your own membership and ask for my information, and they'll pass it on to you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Doug, we do appreciate it. Always a pleasure having you on the program. We could go on and on, but we're going to save that for a third visit. How about that?
That sounds like a plan, Jason.
All right, and that is going to do it for our show this week. We certainly hope you've been both entertained and informed. And if you'd like more information, go to our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com, to find out how you can get involved in the many facets of hemp in Indiana, as well as the entire Midwest. The Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at the Bowes Public Affairs Group at Bowes, McKinney, and Evans. Thanks again for tuning in, and remember to tell a friend about the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. We'll see you next time, everybody.